A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one from a friend's apartment. 30 floors up, golden hour. The whole Jerusalem skyline stretching out in front of him. And he's got his phone. He's got the widest lens he owns. And it's still not enough. He wants to capture this view at a resolution you could actually print. I mean, really print. Large format, gallery on the wall print. And he's asking, if you're standing there with an Android phone, what's the most professional way to stitch together a panorama that actually does justice to what your eyes are seeing?
This is one of those questions where the gap between what the phone can do and what most people actually do with it is enormous. Your eye is taking in maybe 180 degrees of city. The old city walls catching that low amber light, the towers in the business district, the hills dropping off toward the desert. You pull out your phone, switch to the ultra-wide lens on something like a Galaxy S25 Ultra that's a 12mm equivalent, and you get maybe 120 degrees of field of view at about 12 megapixels. That's the trade-off right there. You can have the width or you can have the resolution, but you can't have both in a single frame.
12 megapixels sounds fine until you do the math on what a real print demands.
A 24 by 36 inch print at 300 dots per inch. The standard for something you'd hang on a wall and inspect up close requires about 78 megapixels. Your single ultra-wide shot is delivering 12. You're not even in the same postal code. And here's the thing that kills me. Most people would just swipe over to panorama mode, pan the phone across the skyline, and call it done. What they don't realize is that built-in panorama mode compresses everything down to an 8-bit JPEG, throws away most of the dynamic range, and spits out a file that's maybe 4 to 8 megapixels total. You've just taken a sensor capable of extraordinary things and reduced it to something that looks fine on Instagram and falls apart the moment you try to print it at any meaningful size.
The panorama mode that ships with the phone is essentially a convenience feature that actively works against what Daniel's trying to do.
It's a snapshot tool. It's designed for speed and sharing, not for quality. 8-bit JPEG means 256 tonal values per channel. A raw file from the same sensor is capturing 10 to 14 stops of dynamic range, thousands of tonal values. When you're shooting a Jerusalem skyline at golden hour, you've got the sun blazing off white limestone on one side and deep shadow in the valleys on the other. That 8-bit file is clipping highlights and crushing shadows before you even get it into editing software. You can't recover what was never recorded.
The real question underneath Daniel's question is, how do you bypass the built-in compromises and manually build a file that actually uses everything the sensor can give you?
That's it. And the answer is stitching. But intentional, manual stitching, not the swipe and pray version. When you shoot individual raw frames with locked exposure and proper overlap, then merge them in dedicated software, you're essentially turning your phone into a virtual medium format camera. A single frame from the Galaxy S25 Ultra's main sensor is 50 megapixels. Shoot 8 or 10 of those with 40% overlap, stitch them together, and you're looking at a final file that's 100 to 200 megapixels. That's exceeding what a 50 megapixel full frame sensor can capture in a single shot, because you're physically gathering more total light and more total detail across multiple exposures.
The phone in your pocket, if you know what you're doing, can outresolve professional camera bodies from 5 years ago.
That's not hyperbole. The math works. Each frame is a real 50 megapixel capture. Stitch 6 of them with 40% overlap, and after accounting for the overlap, you're still netting something like 120 megapixels of unique image data. A Sony A1, a $5,000 body, captures 50 megapixels in a single frame. You're more than doubling that with a phone. The limitation has never been the hardware, it's been the technique.
Which is where I think most people get intimidated and just default to the easy button.
I get why. Manual stitching sounds like one of those things that requires a tripod and a panel head and a laptop. But the reality is, for the kind of panorama Daniel's describing, A city skyline from a fixed position, no nearby foreground objects. You can get professional results handheld if you follow a few non-negotiable rules. The first and most important one is locking exposure.
This is the thing that ruins more stitches than anything else, right?
It's the silent killer. You're panning across the scene and the phone's auto-exposure sees a bright patch of sky and darkens the frame, then sees a shadowed building and brightens it. Now you've got adjacent frames with different exposures, and when the stitching software tries to blend them, you get visible seams, bands of brightness and color that no amount of post-processing can fully hide. You have to lock exposure and white balance before you take the first frame. On Android, you do this in Pro mode, either the built-in one on Samsung or Google phones, or a third-party app like Open Camera, which is free and gives you full manual control.
Walk me through the actual settings. You're on the rooftop. The light is golden and dropping fast. What are you dialing in?
Set it to base. That's typically 50 or 100, depending on the phone. On the Galaxy S25 Ultra, base ISO is 50, and that's where you get maximum dynamic range and minimum noise. You do not want the phone deciding to bump ISO to 800 because a cloud passed over. Second, shutter speed. Set it manually based on the brightest part of the scene. You're exposing for the highlights in a golden hour situation, because you can recover shadows from a RAW file, but you cannot recover blown highlights. Something like 1 over 125th of a second is a good starting point. Third, white balance. Lock it to a fixed Kelvin value. 5500 Kelvin is roughly daylight. Do not leave it on auto, because auto white balance will shift from frame to frame as the color temperature changes across the scene. That's a nightmare to fix in post. Fourth, focus. Manual focus set to infinity or just short of it. You want consistent sharpness across all frames.
All of this is before you take a single shot.
It takes 30 seconds to dial in, and it's the difference between a stitch that works and a stitch that doesn't. I'd rather spend 30 seconds setting up than spend 30 minutes in Lightroom trying to fix exposure drift that can't really be fixed.
What about the actual shooting? The physical motion of capturing the frames?
This is where most people get it wrong, because they treat it like a video pan. They stand in one spot, twist at the waist, and wave the phone in an arc. That introduces parallax error, the apparent shift in position of objects relative to each other as the camera moves. Even a few inches of lateral movement can make the stitching software's job much harder. The correct technique is to rotate the phone around its lens entrance pupil, which, on a phone, is roughly the rear camera module. You do this by tucking your elbows into your sides, planting your feet, and rotating from the hips. The phone stays in the same physical location in space, it just pivots.
Like you're a turntable.
You're a human tripod head. And here's a tip that makes a bigger difference than most people expect. Shoot in portrait orientation.
For a landscape panorama.
It sounds counterintuitive, but think about it. If you're shooting a horizontal sweep, holding the phone in portrait orientation gives you more vertical resolution per frame. You're capturing more sky and more foreground in each shot, which means the final stitched image will have more room to crop without losing detail. A landscape orientation sweep of a skyline often ends up as a very thin strip, lots of width, almost no height. Portrait orientation gives you a more usable aspect ratio and significantly more total pixels.
That's the kind of thing you don't think about until you're staring at a finished panorama that's 12,000 pixels wide and 800 pixels tall.
It looks like a ribbon. Nobody wants a ribbon panorama. Portrait orientation with a phone gives you roughly a 4 to 3 vertical capture per frame. And when you stitch 6 or 8 of those together, you end up with something that can be cropped to a natural wide aspect ratio. 16 by 9, 2 by 1, whatever, with plenty of vertical resolution to spare.
What about overlap? How much of each frame should be shared with the next?
30 to 50% is the sweet spot. Below 20%, the stitching software doesn't have enough common features to reliably align the frames. Above 60%, you're just wasting resolution and creating redundant data that can actually confuse the alignment algorithms. For a 180-degree panorama with a phone's main lens, roughly a 24mm equivalent with a field of view around 80 degrees, you're looking at maybe 6 to 8 frames with 40% overlap to cover the full sweep with margin for error.
You want that margin, because if you undershoot the edges, you can't go back.
Golden hour waits for no one. You get maybe 15-20 minutes of that light, and once it's gone, it's gone. I always tell people to shoot one extra frame on each end of the sweep. It costs you nothing in the moment and saves you from discovering in post that you clipped the dome of the rock by 2 degrees.
The capture checklist is Pro Mode, Base ISO, Manual Shutter, Locked White Balance, Manual Focus, Portrait Orientation, Rotate from the Hips, 40% Overlap, Shoot Raw, and Grab an Extra Frame on each end.
That's it. That's the whole capture workflow. It sounds like a lot when you list it out, but once you've done it twice, it becomes muscle memory. And the difference in the final image. We're talking about a file that can be printed at 24 by 36 inches with every window grill on a building 2 kilometers away resolving clearly versus a single frame where those same details are a smudge of pixels. That's not a subtle improvement. That's the difference between a snapshot and something you'd frame.
All of this is happening on a device that also takes phone calls.
The sensor in a modern flagship Android phone is genuinely extraordinary. The Galaxy S25 Ultra's main sensor is a 200-megapixel chip that bends down to 50 megapixels with pixel-level detail that rivals dedicated cameras. The limitation has never been the hardware. It's that most people never learn how to use it beyond pointing and tapping. What Daniel's asking is really, how do I stop treating this thing like a point and shoot and start treating it like the imaging tool it actually is? And the answer starts with those 30 seconds of manual setup before the first frame.
We've got the capture side. The frames are on the phone. Now the question is what you do with them, because the stitching software you choose determines whether those carefully shot frames actually deliver on their promise, or whether the software introduces its own set of problems.
That's where things get interesting, because the software landscape is not all created equal. You've got everything from free open source tools to industry standard desktop applications that have been refined over 25 years. The choice matters enormously, especially when you're aiming for print quality output.
Let's get into that. But first, I want to address the thing Daniel's probably wondering. Why can't I just use the panorama mode that's already on the phone?
Because that mode is optimizing for the wrong thing. Built-in panorama mode on Android captures a video stream as you pan, extracts frames, and stitches them on the fly. The output is an 8-bit JPEG, typically 4 to 8 megapixels total, regardless of what sensor you're using. On a Galaxy S25 Ultra, you've got a sensor capable of 50 megapixel raw captures, and the panorama mode is giving you something with less resolution than a phone camera from 2015. And the dynamic range goes out the window. 8-bit JPEG means 256 tonal values per color channel. A raw file from that same sensor is capturing 10 to 14 stops of dynamic range. When you're shooting the Jerusalem skyline at golden hour, with the sun raking across limestone buildings and deep shadows pooling in the valleys, that compression is devastating. You're clipping highlights and crushing shadows before the file even saves.
The built-in mode is essentially a preview tool that happens to save a file.
It's fine for a quick share, but Daniel said he wants something print-worthy, large format, gallery quality. A 24 by 36 inch print at 300 dots per inch demands about 78 megapixels. The panorama mode is giving you 4 to 8. You're not even in the ballpark.
The whole game is manual capture. Individual frames, raw, locked settings, and then stitching them in software that actually respects the data you've captured.
And that's where the 3 non-negotiable pillars come in. We talked about the first one, locking exposure. Any drift in brightness or white balance between frames creates visible seams that are essentially unfixable. The second pillar is overlap, 30 to 50% between adjacent frames. Below 20%, the stitching algorithm can't find enough common features to align the images reliably. Above 60%, you're introducing redundant data that can actually degrade the alignment. The third pillar is the one most people get wrong, parallax minimization. If you're waving the phone in an arc from your wrist, the lens is moving through space, and objects in the scene shift relative to each other. The stitching software sees the same building in 2 different positions and doesn't know which one is correct.
The hip rotation thing isn't just a nice to have.
It's the difference between a clean stitch and a mess. You're rotating the phone around its lens entrance pupil. Tuck your elbows, plant your feet, pivot from the hips. The phone stays in the same physical location and just changes its angle. That's what dedicated panorama heads do for DSLRs, and you can approximate it handheld with a phone if you're deliberate about it. For a skyline at distance, minor parallax errors are less catastrophic than they'd be with nearby foreground, but why introduce the problem at all when the fix is just rotating correctly?
There's one piece of the capture checklist that deserves more attention, because it's where people actually get stuck. Locking exposure on Android when there's no dedicated AE lock button staring you in the face.
This trips people up because it's not always obvious where the lock lives. On Samsung's Pro mode, you long press the screen and a little padlock icon appears that locks both exposure and focus together. On Google's camera app, you tap to focus, and then there's a lock icon that slides up. But on some Android skins, the lock is buried or behaves inconsistently. That's why I recommend Open Camera. It's free, open source, and gives you an explicit exposure lock toggle right on the main screen. You tap it once, it stays locked, no ambiguity.
You can verify it's locked because the preview stops flickering as you pan across the scene.
If the preview is still brightening and darkening as you sweep, the lock didn't take. You want the preview to look wrong in parts of the sweep. Too dark over here, too bright over there, because that means the exposure is consistent and the scene's actual brightness variation is what you're seeing. The stitching software can handle that. What it cannot handle is the exposure itself changing from frame to frame.
You're deliberately breaking the preview to save the stitch.
You're sacrificing the live view convenience for the final image quality, and this ties into the file format choice. You have to actively switch to RAW. On Samsung, it's in the camera settings under Advanced Picture Options. On Open Camera, it's right in the Output Format dropdown. A RAW file, which is a DNG on Android, preserves the full sensor data, 10 to 14 stops of dynamic range depending on the phone. That means when you've got the Jerusalem skyline with the sun hitting the limestone and deep shadows in the valleys, you can pull detail out of both ends and post. A JPEG is already baked in the tone curve and thrown away everything outside it. And with a panorama, any JPEG compression artifacts get amplified across the blend zones. A single artifact at a seam boundary becomes visible, banding across the whole stitch. RAW avoids that entirely because there's no compression to begin with.
Let's put some concrete numbers on this. You mentioned the Galaxy S25 Ultra. Walk me through a real scenario. Daniel's on that 30th floor balcony, golden hour, the city stretching out in front of him.
Here's what that shoot looks like. 8 raw frames in portrait orientation. That gives you the vertical height to include both the sky and the foreground without cropping later. ISO locked at 50, which is base ISO on that sensor and where you get maximum dynamic range and minimum noise. Shutter speed manually set to 1 over 125th of a second. Fast enough to freeze any handheld motion blur from the rotation. Slow enough to gather good light at golden hour. White balance locked to 5500 Kelvin, so the warm golden tones are captured consistently across every frame. Focus set manually to infinity. 40% overlap between each frame. You can eyeball this by noting a landmark near the right edge of one frame and making sure it's about a third of the way in from the left edge of the next. After stitching, you're looking at roughly 120 megapixels. That's enough for a 30 by 45 inch print at 300 dots per inch. Every window, every rooftop detail, every texture in the stone, it's all there. Compare that to a single ultra-wide frame at 12 megapixels, which falls apart above an 8x10 print. You've just multiplied your printable area by a factor of 15 or more.
All of that was captured on a phone, handheld, in about 90 seconds of shooting.
The setup takes 30 seconds, the sweep takes 60, and you've got a data set that can produce gallery-quality output. The slow part is the stitching and post-processing, but that's a separate conversation. What matters for the capture phase is that every decision, base ISO, locked white balance, portrait orientation, 40% overlap, RAW format, is in service of giving the stitching software the cleanest possible input. Garbage in, garbage out works both ways. Clean input and even mediocre software can produce something decent. But clean input with good software, that's where the magic happens.
That portrait orientation point, I want to sit with that for a second, because it really is counterintuitive. You're shooting a landscape panorama. Why would you hold the phone vertically?
Because the phone's sensor is wider than it is tall when you hold it horizontally. In landscape orientation, your vertical resolution is limited to the short edge of the sensor, maybe 3,000 pixels on a typical phone. In portrait orientation, the long edge of the sensor is now vertical, giving you 4,000 or more pixels of height per frame. When you stitch a horizontal sweep, you want vertical resolution because that's what determines how much you can crop without losing print quality. A landscape orientation sweep often ends up as a thin strip, 12,000 pixels wide, 1,200 pixels tall. Portrait orientation gives you frames that are roughly 4,000 by 3,000 pixels each, and when you stitch 6 or 8 of those, you end up with something like 14,000 by 3,500 pixels, a much more natural ratio that can be cropped to 16 by 9 or 2 by 1 without throwing away detail.
It's not just about total megapixels, it's about usable megapixels in the dimension that matters.
Megapixels in the width are easy, you just keep panning. Megapixels in the height are fixed by the sensor orientation. Portrait mode maximizes the fixed dimension. It's one of those things that's obvious once you think about it, but most people never do, because landscape photo equals landscape phone orientation feels natural.
The phone's orientation has nothing to do with the final image orientation. It's just about how you're feeding the sensor.
The stitch doesn't care how you held the phone. It just sees a grid of pixels, and you want that grid to be as tall as possible per frame so the final panorama has room to breathe vertically.
You've got 8 raw frames on your phone, perfectly exposed, 40% overlap, locked white balance. Now the question is what software you feed them into.
3 tiers worth knowing. First, Adobe Lightroom's Photo Merge. It's built right into Lightroom Mobile, so your whole workflow can stay on the phone. Select your frames, tap Panorama Merge, and it spits out a stitch DNG. It handles up to 10 frames, which covers most skyline sweeps. The catch is, it's a black box. You can't manually adjust control points if the alignment goes wrong. It's good for maybe 80% of scenes, but when it struggles with complex parallax or repetitive patterns, you have no recourse except to try again and hope.
It's convenient right up until it isn't.
That's exactly the trade-off. The second tier is PT Guai. This has been the industry standard for panoramic stitching since 1999. It runs on desktop, costs about $150, and gives you full control over control point generation, lens distortion profiles, and projection selection. You can manually place control points on tricky features, mask out moving objects, and optimize the alignment with subpixel precision. For a skyline with distant architecture, PT Guai typically produces about 15% fewer alignment artifacts than Lightroom. You can measure this by checking pixel deviation at the seam boundaries, especially on fine repeating details like window grids on distant towers.
15% doesn't sound huge until you're staring at a misaligned seam on a print that's 3 feet wide.
On a 24 by 36 inch print, a single pixel misalignment is visible if you're standing close. 15% fewer artifacts is the difference between a print that holds up under scrutiny and one that makes you wince. The third tier is Hugin, completely free, open source, and about as user-friendly as a tax form. It gives you manual control over everything PT Guai does, plus some esoteric projection options, but the learning curve is steep.
For someone who wants to stay on Android and not touch a desktop, Lightroom Mobile is the path of least resistance.
For 90% of what Daniel's describing, it'll do the job. But if you're chasing that last 10% of quality, the kind where you're printing at 30 by 45 inches and want every brick in the old city walls to resolve, PT Guai on a desktop is worth the investment. It's been the gold standard for a quarter century for a reason.
What about the projection itself? I've seen stitched panoramas that look warped at the edges, like the buildings are sliding off the frame.
That's a projection choice problem. When you stitch frames, the software has to decide how to map a spherical capture onto a flat image. Rectilinear projection keeps straight lines perfectly. Straight. It's what architectural photographers use, but it stretches the edges aggressively. For anything wider than about 100 degrees, the corners become comically distorted. Cylindrical projection is the natural choice for a city skyline at 120 to 180 degrees. It keeps vertical lines vertical while letting the horizon curve naturally. No bowling, no edge stretch. Spherical is for full 360 captures and creates a distinctive bowl distortion. On a skyline, the towers at the edges would lean inward. PT Guai lets you choose any of these. Lightroom defaults to cylindrical for horizontal sweeps, which is usually what you want for this kind of shot.
Once the stitch is done, you're sitting on this massive file, 100, 200 megapixels. What's the path from that to an actual print?
The file is almost certainly overkill for the print size. For a 24 by 36 inch print at 300 dots per inch, you need exactly 7,200 by 10,800 pixels, about 78 megapixels. If your stitch is 150 megapixels, you need to downsample. In Lightroom, export with resampling set to bicubic sharper. That algorithm is optimized for reduction and avoids the aliasing artifacts you'd get from a basic bicubic downscale. Set the long edge to 10,800 pixels, output sharpening to matte paper, and color space to Adobe RGB.
Why Adobe RGB over sRGB?
Adobe RGB covers a wider color gamut, about 50% of visible colors versus sRGB's 35%. For golden hour tones, those warm oranges and magentas in the sky, sRGB clips the most saturated parts. Adobe RGB preserves them. If the print lab supports it, you'll see the difference in the final output, especially in the transition zones between bright sky and dark buildings.
Which brings us to what I'm calling the Jerusalem problem. You've got blazing sky and deep shadow in the same frame, and the dynamic range is punishing.
Golden hour over the Jerusalem skyline is about as high contrast as it gets. White limestone reflecting direct sun against shadowed valleys and alleys. You have two approaches. One is exposure bracketing. Shoot three exposures per position, two stops apart, merge each set to HDR before stitching. This captures everything, but it triples your frame count and the workflow gets cumbersome. The other approach, which I think works for most cases with modern sensors, is to rely on a single well-exposed raw per position. The Galaxy S25 Ultra captures about 14 stops of dynamic range in a single DNG. If you expose for the highlights, let the shadows go dark. You can recover an enormous amount of shadow detail in post without introducing noise.
Brackett, if you're a perfectionist, single raw if you trust the sensor.
With current flagship sensors, the single raw approach is sufficient for everything short of direct sun in the frame. I've pulled 5 stops out of shadows on a DNG from that sensor, and the noise floor was still clean enough for print.
There's a tangible test for all of this, right? You actually printed one of these.
Same 8-frame set, stitched and printed at 24 by 36 inches. With a 10-power loop, you can resolve individual window grills on residential buildings 2 kilometers away, details that are a pixelated smear in a single ultra-wide frame at the same print size. The stitch isn't just bigger, it's more detailed. You're capturing information that a single frame physically cannot record because the lens can't be both wide and telephoto at the same time.
This stitch isn't compensating for the phone's limitations. It's bypassing a physical law of optics.
You're trading time for resolution. A single ultra-wide frame captures the whole scene in one instant, but at low detail. The stitch captures the scene in slices over maybe 60 seconds, but each slice is at full sensor resolution. The total information gathered is an order of magnitude higher, and it shows in the print.
If you're giving Daniel a workflow, he can actually use next time he's up on that balcony. What's the checklist?
Step 1. Before you take a single frame, open Pro Mode or open camera. Lock ISO at base, which is 50 on the S25 Ultra. Lock shutter speed, expose for the highlights, something around 1 over 125th if the light's holding. Lock white balance to a fixed Kelvin value, 5500 or thereabouts. Manual focus to infinity. That's 30 seconds of setup. Step 2, the actual sweep. Portrait orientation, 40% overlap between frames. Tuck your elbows, rotate from the hips, keep the phone pivoting around the rear camera module. Shoot RAW, not JPEG. Grab one extra frame on each end of the sweep. Every single decision there is in service of giving the stitching software clean, consistent data. Step 3, stitch. Lightroom Mobile's Panorama merge if you want to stay entirely on the phone. If you're chasing absolute quality for a large print, offload the frames to a desktop and use PTGui. For a Jerusalem skyline, cylindrical projection is the right call. Keeps the towers vertical, no edge warping. Step 4, export for print. Downsample to your target print dimensions. For 24 by 36 at 300 dpi, that's 78 megapixels. Use bicubic sharper for the reduction, output sharpening set to matte paper, color space, Adobe RGB to preserve those golden hour tones the sRGB clips. That's the whole pipeline.
If someone remembers nothing else from this conversation, what's the one thing that makes or breaks the result?
It's non-negotiable. A stitched panorama with exposure drift between frames is unfixable. You'll have visible bands at every seam, and no amount of post-processing can truly hide them. A set of frames with mediocre alignment but consistent exposure can be salvaged. The reverse is not true. Locking exposure is the single highest leverage thing you can do, and it costs you nothing except 30 seconds of attention before the first shot.
The tool recommendation for someone who wants to do all of this on Android without touching a desktop.
Open Camera plus Lightroom Mobile. Open Camera is free, gives you full manual control with an explicit exposure lock toggle, and outputs clean DNGs. Lightroom Mobile handles the stitch and the export. That combo covers 90% of what most people need. The remaining 10% complex parallax from nearby foreground, 360 work, scenes with moving elements like traffic or people, that's where PTGui on a desktop earns its price tag. But for Daniel Skyline from a fixed balcony 30 floors up, the phone-only workflow is more than capable.
Here's the thing I keep turning over. We just laid out this whole workflow. Lock exposure, shoot raw, stitch in PTGui, export for print, and it works. It works today. On a phone, handheld. But the direction computational photography is moving, you have to wonder how long manual stitching stays relevant. Google's Magic Editor can already remove objects and recompose scenes. Samsung's Galaxy AI is doing sky replacement and reflection removal in real time. What happens when the phone can stitch a 200 megapixel panorama automatically from a single pan with AI filling in the gaps?
That's the tension, isn't it? AI can hallucinate detail that looks convincing on a screen. But Daniel's talking about a print, something you hang on a wall and inspect from 6 inches away. AI upscaling can't reconstruct a window grill that was never recorded. It can guess, and the guess might look plausible at a glance, but it's not the same as captured photons. For a social media post, AI fill is indistinguishable from real detail. For a 24 by 36 inch print viewed under gallery lighting, the difference is the difference between a photograph and an illustration. The skill of intentional capture, knowing how to lock exposure, how to rotate around the nodal point, how to give the stitching engine clean data, that's what separates the two.
The tools will get smarter, but the photographer who knows what the tools are actually doing will always have an edge.
The best camera is the one you have, but only if you know how to use it. A decade ago, the idea that you could shoot a gallery-quality large-format print on a phone was absurd. Today, Daniel can stand on that balcony with an Android phone and produce something that holds up next to medium-format work. The hardware caught up. The question is whether the photographer catches up with the hardware.
That's really what Daniel's asking. Not just which button to press, but how to see the scene the way the sensor sees it, and then make the sensor see what his eyes see.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1970s, a mechanical tide-predicting computer built in 1910 was discovered abandoned in a warehouse on Unalaska Island in the Aleutians. Its brass gears and cams had been calibrated to forecast tides using optical interference patterns projected through glass disks etched with the harmonic constants of the Bering Sea.
A tide computer that used light to do math, sitting in a warehouse for decades.
Of course it was. This has been My Weird Props. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. Find every episode at myweirdprompts.com.
Go shoot something worth printing.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.